No, wait a minute. That's Randy. Yeah. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Friday edition of the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out. If you're watching on Ustream, hello. If you are not, why not? It's free, right? It's free. Just go to MikeMalloy.com, and you'll see a banner that says Malloy Vision. Click it. Before we get into the fun and frivolity of all the disasters going on, the death toll of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan has now, as a result of, I think, four dead today, has now reached 24 dead young Americans in June. And what's today, the 11th? When is Barack Obama going to get us out of there? I'm starting not to like this president at all. But I won't go after his family the way this disgusting, psychotic, soon-to-commit-suicide Glenn Beck has done. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. And we're going to do podcast trivia tonight, maybe at the bottom of this hour. But we'll let you know. We'll let you know so you can get ready for that. A couple emails. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, you may have heard that Saturday, tomorrow, is a worldwide protest against BP. As much as I like to think this will make any difference, I keep thinking about those anti-war protests that were so in vogue during the Bush-Cheney reign of horror. You remember those protests, the ones that died out shortly after January 2009? And as I recall, Bob Alexander wrote a little missive about that touch of hypocrisy from members of the left. Needless to say, we're still at war. I really wonder if the protests would still be going on had McCain won. I really want to think this Saturday protest will make a difference, but I think we all know in our heart of hearts how much of a difference it will make. I'm going to spend time with friends on Saturday and enjoy what time we all have left on Earth. Oh, my God. Keeping it lit, Andy in Seattle. Yeah, I know. You know, the truth is, I didn't know anything about it. I have heard nothing. Of course, that doesn't mean anything. This is from Craig in St. Paul, who writes the subject line, "Where will the circle end?" Craig writes, "I read British media reports that BP is preparing to suspend dividend payments payments to shareholders in order to placate U.S. public opinion." So let's see, Craig writes. Taking full advantage of U.S. deregulation, which began with Ronald Reagan and the Bush tradition of weak enforcement of the few rules that do exist, BP drills a high-risk well without adequate safety preparation, which blows up, creating an extinction-level ecological disaster that pisses off the normally complacent and anti-government U.S. citizenry who demand that their government do something, which threatens to boil over into an international incident causing BP to eliminate its dividends. The British pensioner, whose retirement nest egg is mostly invested in blue-chip BP stock, winds up eating cat food three nights a week while U.S. citizens continue to drive their 6,000-pound SUVs to Tea Party rallies, where they wistfully recall the Reagan era and loudly complain that their taxes are too high, government is too big, and that the Obama administration is killing jobs." Is that about right? Is it any wonder those people hate us? Soon we're going to have to expand the global war on terror beyond just the little brown people in the Middle East with funny names. Craig in St. Paul. Well done. You know what I say to the Brits at this point? Kiss my ass. I mean, seriously. I've got no problem with the English or British citizens, but this is the part that drives me crazy. Do they have any idea? And the answer is no. What is going on in the Gulf of Mexico? What would happen if an American company would come to the North Sea and destroy everything in a manner that will take 50 years to repair? To hell with you people in Britain and your goddamn pension plan. I really don't care. Now I'm getting angry and the show is 11 minutes old. You're whining because you invested in a polluting, death-dealing country. All over the globe, not just here. That's who you invested in. And now you're getting some flack from the United States and you're bitching and complaining. Like I said, kiss my butt. Shut up and sit down. Your pension fund, huh? Well, I'll tell you something, Bubala. We have watched capitalism destroy so many pension funds in this country. Get used to it. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just sick of the inaction on the part of the United States government. And the last thing I need right now is I watch the southern coast of the United States being devoured by petrochemicals and filth and gunk and goo. The last thing I need right now is to hear a bunch of Brits bitching and whining about their retirement plans. Mike in Chicago writes, "Hey, Mike, have I mentioned how much I hate these people? Just when you thought that we were on the seventh plane of hell with this slate wiper in the Gulf Coast, BP created an eighth. I'm so glad I had a chance to visit Panama City in my lifetime. I was listening to Stephanie Miller the other day, and she's telling the story of how ecologists have now said that the temperature recently on the Gulf Coast has been getting hot enough where the oil acts like any other oil would in 100-degree temperatures. It gets hot enough that it's basically been either the equivalent of swimming through maple syrup at 100 degrees or tar and feathering. The bird wildlife in the Gulf that uses feathers as sweat glands have been baking slowly in the sun because of this oil marinade. When will someone in the media finally say, environmentalists were right about drilling? I wish there was a hell for these people to go to." Mike in Chicago. Charlie Crist, I was watching Wolf Blitzer's program, former Mossad. Well, you're never former Mossad, just like you're never former CIA. But Wolf Blitzer on CNN interviewing Charlie Crist, and Crist said enough. No more. There should be zero, zip, no drilling off the coast of Florida. And it makes sense. We can say, well, Charlie Crist is just interested in the economic advantage in his state with the beautiful beaches and the vacation paradise and yada, yada, yada. And right. There's also the ecological situation. But Wolf Blitzer, while he was talking with Charlie, played a little piece of audio from the psychopathic, what's his name, Mario Rubio or something, the guy who is running against Charlie Crist to become senator? Is that right? So here sits this right-wing Republican, I'm sorry, repeat myself, swinish-looking dork, Rubio, looking into the camera saying, well, no, of course we're going to have drilling. Venezuela is going to be drilling out there in China and Cuba. Jesus God. So anyway, good luck, Charlie. I frankly don't give a damn who wins your Senate race down there. But if I did give a damn, I would hope that you would kick Rubio's smart alecky ass. All right, we have a break here. So, stick around. Oh, you're taking calls already. All right. We will, we'll take some phone calls. The number is, 877-996-2556. Let's see where the program goes tonight. I have absolutely nothing planned. Nothing. I mean, how do you plan when you have... Oh, never mind. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
If you're tired of people dying, come on. If you're tired of the fighting, come on. No more wars, no more lying, come on. All my people in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on, let's go.
Someday,
yes, we'll put it together and we'll get it all done.
Someday,
the world is much brighter.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Malachi in Saskatoon just sent this to me. According to CBC, Canadian Broadcast Corporation, the Gulf spill will cost $1.3 trillion. That's let's see, it's $1,000 billion. A study started 2 years before the devastating oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico suggests resources valued at $1.3 trillion are at risk from the oozing crude. That's U.S. dollars. The study by Earth Economics of Seattle was released yesterday after researchers refocused it to gauge the impact of the spill. The report also factors in environmental degradation from oil and gas activity in the region over the years. $1.3 trillion. And British Petroleum vows to take care of all the cost. Okay. John is in Maplewood, New Jersey. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. There's some great.
All right.
Hello?
I'm going to put you. Let me put you on hold. Kathy, will you tell him he's got to get to a different cell? We just can't do that. Every other word. Rich is in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hello, Rich.
Hey, there we go. What was that?
I have no idea, but go ahead.
That's better. No, I was going to say, you should be very happy that it's an English company and that it's BP, because this very well could be the Chinese. They're drilling in the Caribbean now, too. And, you know, these are international waters. And there is no way the Chinese, if they were involved in a mess like this, that they would stand behind it. I mean, we've seen disasters with their products, like tires that fall apart and sheetrock, and they walk away from it. They just laugh at us. So, you know,
BP. So wait, let me make sure I get you right. I'm to be happy?
Well, you should be glad that they're standing behind their they're not walking away from this.
I don't think they dare walk away. If they walk away, and I think
what are you going to do if they walk away? You're going to sue them?
No. You immediately take the company away from them. Put them in
the
receivership.
Away. Yeah,
excuse
okay.
me?
You're going to take the company away. You're going to nationalize it like Chavez, huh?
No, you don't nationalize it like Chavez. What the hell is wrong with you? What you do is force BP to be responsible if they try to walk away. Oh, wait a minute. I got it. You're a right winger. You don't believe in responsibility. That's right. Okay. Goodbye. Nice talking to you. What was he trying to say? Not that I give a damn, but what was he trying to say? He was trying to say that I should be glad because it's BP, because BP is sticking around, and they could walk, they wouldn't walk away from it. If push comes to shove, any company walks away from it. You just put them in receivership. The United States government takes over and seizes every asset they have on Earth. Very simple.
He wanted to also make the point, I guess he didn't have time, but he wanted to make the point that if BP had been allowed to drill in shallow water.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Those dirty, rotten regulations. That's right. Okay. Jesus Christ. Hey, pal that just called me. Do me a favor. Keep your radio tuned to Limbaugh and Beck. Don't listen to people like me because, it makes no sense to you. It's just gibberish. B, you get a burr up your butt and you decide you want to call a program like mine and I mean, the audience that I have doesn't want to hear your garbage. If they want to hear your garbage, they'll switch over to the Pig Man or the Suicide Jerk or the Sock Puppet on Fox Radio. So, you know, honest to God.
Yeah, it was the regulations that made them go way out there. Just like the regulations that were, like Barack Obama didn't issue any drilling permits to Royal Dutch Shell, did he? And they were supposed to begin that off the coast of Alaska, well, my golly, in August.
Go away, you moron. Jesus Christ, what do you people use for brains? What? I can't take that kind of ignorance. It just screws up my whole night. I mean, it really does.
Well, the reason they did that is because they had to go way out there to drill. Yeah, out there, the regulations are different, right? Yeah, well, it's deep water, not shallow water. It's salt water, not fresh water or dirt water or...
Oh, my God. My God, don't call. Please. I know sometimes I've said, you know, we invite the right-wing crazies, but every time, you know, all you people do is get on my program and spout stuff. They're not your thoughts. They're not your words. They're not your sentences. You're like a pipe that Limbaugh urinates through or that Glenn Beck screams through, you know. Don't do that. Don't call me. Call somebody else. Thank you.
Against the Flying Monkey Rights with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, I guess what we'll do is we'll do podcast trivia next hour, bottom of the next hour. Okay, this is from Andrea, who writes, Mike, what if the huge pool of the oil is all of the oil in the Gulf? In other words, all the oil well operations that think they are temporarily suspended during this moratorium will no longer be able to suck up the oil they were pumping before because all of the oil is exploding through this very, very deep, unstoppable body of oil. In other words, imagine there's a huge underwater oil lake that might even be as big as the size of the Gulf itself. I'm having trouble to even describing what I'm saying. You talked about the possibility that the ocean floor might collapse. Well, why not? And at some point, the other wells will dry up because the explosion of the deep mess that nobody can stop will suck all the oil that used to be pumped by the thousands of other wells. So when these wells hook themselves up again, they will just have very little oil and pressure because it's spilling out from the monster gusher. Why assume that the pool is small? I haven't given up on Obama. He might have just one term, but I still believe he's doing everything he can do. He just isn't really big on announcing what he's trying to do. Rerouting the Mississippi is one thing they're planning. Rerouting the Mississippi? Really? But the plan is pending the oil being stopped. If it cannot be stopped, then unemployment just continues to exist, both for oil workers and oil service companies and fishermen and seafood restaurants. We all know, and we all end up in the fascism that you often discuss. I think nobody planned for this event and are just now beginning to realize what they have done to the planet. Nobody wants to talk about it. Who cares who got elected last week in the primaries? What possible relevance is that? When will all the cleanup crews realize there's no end? It's like trying to mop the bathroom floor, but the tub is still overflowing because nobody knows how to turn the water off. Except, this is not water. Andrea. Well, our economic affairs correspondent, Andrea, that would be Bruce Enberg, explained to me in an email after the program last night why a collapse of the ocean floor is science fiction. You know, that's not going to happen. And he explained why it wouldn't happen. And also the fact that the oil really is not sitting down there in a huge pool. It's between layers of rock and so on and so forth. So I think we're not going to experience that. Charles Schumer, United States Senator, white guy, Jewish, always butting in where he probably doesn't belong. He said the day before yesterday, well, he had a wide-ranging speech at an Orthodox union event in Washington, D.C. That's a union of Orthodox Jews. His lecture touched on areas such as Iran's nuclear program, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and several domestic policy issues. During one point of his speech, this is from thinkprogress.org, during one point of his speech, Schumer turned his attention to the situation in Gaza. He told the audience that the Palestinian people still don't believe in the Jewish state in a two-state solution, quote, end quote. And he also said that, quote, they don't believe in the Torah. They don't believe in David, quote, end quote. He went on to say, quote, you have to force them to say Israel's here to stay, end quote. New York senior senator then explained that the current Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip, which is causing a humanitarian crisis there, is not only justified because it keeps weapons out of the Palestinian territory, but also because it shows the Palestinians living there that, quote, when there's some moderation and cooperation, then they can have an economic advancement, end quote. Summing up his feelings, Schumer emphasized the need to, quote, strangle them economically until they see that's not the way to go, end quote. So this is the direct quote. Here's Schumer. The Palestinian people still don't believe in the Jewish state, in a two-state solution. More do than before, but a majority still do not. Their fundamental view is the Europeans treated the Jews badly and gave them our land. This is Palestinian thinking. They don't believe in the Torah, in David. You have to force them to say Israel's here to stay. The boycott of Gaza, to me, has another purpose. Obviously, the first purpose is to prevent Hamas from getting weapons by which they will use to hurt Israel. But the second is actually to show the Palestinians that when there's some moderation and cooperation, they can have an economic advancement. When there's total war against Israel, which Hamas wages, they're going to get nowhere. And to me, since the Palestinians in Gaza elected Hamas, while certainly there should be humanitarian aid and people not starving to death, to strangle them economically until they see that's not the way to go makes sense. Well, Schumer is either pandering to his Orthodox Jewish audience, or he's a fool, or he's a liar, or possibly all three. He's incorrect that the majority, his word, of Palestinians refuse to accept a two-state solution. Recent polling has found that 74% of the Palestinian population wants to see a two-state solution with an Israeli and Palestinian state side by side. It's also the position of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas that there is evidence, and there is evidence in Gaza's Hamas rulers, may be compelled to support such a solution as well. As for Schumer's comments on economic strangulation making sense, to produce better leadership in Gaza, they are as offensive, those comments, as they are wrong. Schumer believes it is logical to economically harm the civilian population of Gaza, where 44% of the people are under the age of 14. He wants to harm them for freely voting in an election that the United States, during the Bush reign of terror, supported and then undermined because the wrong group won in order to change the territory's government. The reality is that its leadership has only become further radicalized and entrenched as a result of the embargo. And thanks to Mondo Weiss, as well as thinkprogress.org, for those thoughts. Schumer. What a pig. What a rat bastard. And he's a Democrat? No, he's not a Democrat. He is a, well, he is a Democrat, but what he is a corporatist, a power-mad jerk who operates more on behalf of Israel than he operates on behalf of the United States, which is, I don't know, back in the day, they used to call that a fifth columnist, I believe, or a traitor, or a sneak, or a con artist, or somebody who wasn't protecting and defending the U.S. Constitution, to which he swore an oath. Oh, but that was a long time ago, Mike. That quaint little crap doesn't apply anymore except the addled minds of teabaggers. Perez is in Santa Rosa, California. ¿Cómo está?
Hey, bien, amigo.
Bueno.
Yeah, listen, buddy, I haven't talked to you in a while. Sure is good hearing you. Go ahead.
I haven't said anything.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm echoing here a little bit for some reason.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you know what?
What?
Is it better now?
Okay.
I think it is. Listen, I wasn't going to comment on Schumer, but I'm sorry. I hate to say it. I know I'd be in more trouble than Helen Thomas, but I don't have a White House seat to lose, but it appears to me that the Jewish state is acting just like fascists and all. They used to be called National Socialist. I'll just leave that where it lays.
Yeah, okay.
I know a Palestinian is good friends of mine, and it's just shameful. But anyway, I wanted to comment on the BP thing. But first, I want to say, make one quick comment about 9/11, and I won't dwell on it. But I even some progressive, they used to be, I consider progressive talk show hosts, and I think you know some of them.
Yeah, probably.
I've been saying now, there's two things that they've given up on now, this Gaza-Israel thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also given up, and they talk about conspiracy theories. Well, in my opinion, the government story, which has changed at least three times, of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory. So let's just choose which one we want to believe, Mike.
Yeah, okay.
And how's that sound? But I mainly wanted to comment on this BP thing.
Okay.
That idiot that called. It's so funny how they can't wait to play their little tiny dynamite cards, and they're like little children. He wanted to play that right-wing card and then run away giggling, thinking he scored a quick one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like little children trying to talk to adults. Number one, that disaster that happened in 1979 was in 200 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them 9 months, and it was the relief well.
Right.
And also, when BP applied for their drilling permit, they said, remember when Tony Edwards said we'd like to have that tool in our toolkit?
You're right.
A way
yes.
to stop this?
Yes.
Well, and their permit to drill way back when, they said they have the capacity to deal with a spill 10 times this size.
Mm-hmm.
They lied on their permit. Now, that's fraud and other felonies. And
right.
also, I think they wanted to save this well. That's why they didn't cap it right away in the first place,
because
they would lose it. I was working on for a seismograph crew.
Hey, hold on a second, Prez. Let me I got to do some commercials. I'll come back and we'll pick it up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thousand sons and never grew to fathers, don't you?
10 before the hour. We're talking with Perez in Santa Rosa, California. All right, where were you?
Let's see, in the middle of my rant.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, it's pretty mild for me. I'm trying to keep it calm. I'm drinking a little red wine now, Mike. So
oh, good.
Keep
okay.
it mellow, buddy. Anyway, it's Francis Ford Coppola's winery, and it's a nice little table red, just a rosé wine.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, back to what you were talking about.
Yeah. I was talking about BP and the oil spill. I think that they actually, the reason they didn't want, I used to work up in Wyoming and Utah and stuff, and I remember during 1973, I worked up there as a seismographer in a drilling rig out in the middle of the desert in Utah.
Yeah.
And I saw wells, gasoline storage trucks parked up there for like days and weeks, artificial inflation of, or, depreciation of the oil supply. And they were capping wells like crazy. And that's cost money to cap a well, but you can always go back in later and drill it out, but you got to drill a new pipe and it's hard to get that cement out. You can't really do it.
Right.
So I think BP wanted to save this well because this is a good hole. It's a good punch for them and they didn't want to lose it. And that I think is the root cause. And I tell you two other things I believe are going on. That guy was an idiot talking about, well, aren't you glad they're not Chinese?
Yeah.
I tell you, the Chinese might actually be more responsive and try to do something. I wouldn't trust them any less than I trust the damn British, I'll tell you.
Well, not only that, the guy, and I want to address that, the teabagger that called in here, in the first place, I mean, I'm looking at an article in from TampaBay.com, which is the St. Petersburg Times. China has an onshore land-based lease in Cuba, but China has no offshore leases in the entire Gulf of Mexico, not granted by Cuba, not granted by anybody. So not only is he wrong on that one, Michael in Roswell writes in, so funny, these dweebs always talk about nationalizing the oil company like Chavez. They are idiots. The Venezuelan oil company was nationalized by a predecessor of Chavez who got the legislature to approve it in 1973. Until Chavez took over, that nationalized oil company, I think it was Petróleo Venezuela or something, the PDVSA, it was rife with corruption. For example, even though PDVSA owned a healthy chunk of Citgo, and Citgo was quite profitable, PDVSA hadn't gotten a dividend payment from Citgo for something like 11 years. After Chavez threw out the upper management and put in a guy he could trust, 8 months later, all of a sudden, PDVSA got a $400 million dividend from Citgo. What Chavez has nationalized recently are a few oil fields that were grandfathered in as exempt under the nationalization plan that created PDVSA. Again, these people are morons. And then there's this. This is from Bruce Enberg, who writes, regarding drilling deep, oil companies drill in deep water because that's where 95% of the known oil resides. And it looks like they found more than they expected. In this case, they've been drilling in shallow water since 1946. And they're running out of places to punch holes. Literally, they have drilled every square inch of the bayou. So, to the guy who called in, who was driving around spouting out lies and nonsense put into his head by Limbaugh and Beck and the rest of these freaks, there, three listeners have just straightened your ass out, if it's straightened out a bull, which I doubt. You're a right-winger. You're a teabagger. You're a Republican. You're a conservative. Truth about any of these issues means nothing to you. Nothing. You will call my program and say something like, well, the reason they're drilling in deep water is because environmental regulations force them. When the fact is, they're drilling out there because that's where the oil is, you moron! As far as China and the Caribbean, they're not there! And they won't be because of the embargo between the United States and Cuba. Cuba has a right to put anything in their economic enterprise zone, whatever it is, around their island. But what happens to these international oil companies if they need help from the United States and they're doing business in Cuban waters? It won't happen. (sighs) And you know what? I'll bet the guy that called in here considered himself to be well-informed because he listens to Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and watches the Fox Channel. He probably considers himself to be, well, I'm very well-informed. I know why they're drilling out there. Because the EPA made them. Well, as has been pointed out to you now, they have been drilling in shallow water since 1946. That's 64 years ago. And they're in deep water because that's where the oil is. You dumbass. Oh, and Bob in Kentucky writes in about the Schumer thing. Schumer wants to strangle Gaza because the Palestinians, quote, don't believe in Torah, end quote. Newsflash, Chuck, the Palestinian people are not Jewish. They probably don't believe in Bhagavad Gita either, right? Oh, my God. I don't know. I don't know. I have yet to run across a conservative who has anything. I'm talking about facts. I'm not talking about opinion. If somebody wants a differing opinion, have at it. I mean, opinions are like, you know, rectums. Everyone has one. But to present Rush Limbaugh's opinion as your fact not only makes you look like a moron, it also makes you look stupid because they are not true. Anything you hear from Limbaugh, Beck, or Hannity is a lie. What are you people going to understand? Never, never mind. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jim Cook.
The hour, a couple of updates here regarding Schumer. You know, Chuck Schumer actually congratulated Blanche Lincoln for fighting the unions. And as Michael Whitney, writing at Fire Dog Lake, points out, it takes some gall for the senator who literally represents Wall Street to not just congratulate Blanche Lincoln for fighting Wall Street with her sham derivatives bill, but to in the same breath congratulate her on fighting unions. You know, working people better get away from the Democratic Party. Well, the Democratic Party doesn't exist anymore. I'm serious. You vote a candidate if you want to. If there's a particular candidate that you like, regardless of the party, but it might be a good thing now. Of course, it's probably too late, but it might be a good thing now to start checking out the Peace and Freedom Party. Is that Gary's party? Gary Gordon's? On the West Coast? Or the Greens, or just about anybody. The Democrats are just in the toilet. I mean, they really are, the Democratic Party. Huh. Bruce writes, the air purifier is cleaning up the air so the irritants aren't keeping you awake. Just hook up a cattle fence shocker to your chair on a random timer. Because I complained about using an air purifier in this little studio. Harmid Karzai, how about this guy? We are sending troops into Afghanistan. So far in the month of June, we have had 24 Americans dead. Now, you know, to somebody who is a real cynical bastard, which would be everybody on the right, it's not a bad ratio when you stop and consider how many Afghans we have killed. So, you know, it all works out, right? Now, this is from the chicken hawks and the militia types who would no more go into the military than they would cut their own throats. But Harmid Karzai, who is the, quote, president, in the same way that George W. Bush was the, quote, president of the United States, Harmid Karzai is a president of Afghanistan. Well, get this. Dexter Filkins, writing at the New York Times, says two senior Afghan officials were showing Harmid Karzai the evidence of that spectacular rocket attack on the nationwide peace conference earlier this month. Remember that? Different groups got together to try to work out something inside Afghanistan, and boom, rockets went off, a bunch of people were killed. Karzai told these two senior officials that he believed the Taliban were not responsible. Amrullah Saleh, then the director of the Afghan intelligence service, said, quote, President Karzai did not show any interest in the evidence, none. He treated it like a piece of dirt, end quote. Mr. Saleh declined to discuss Karzai's reasoning in more detail. But a prominent Afghan with knowledge of the meeting, who spoke on conditions of anonymity, said that Harmid Karzai suggested in the meeting that it might have been the Americans who carried out the attack. Well, on that, I don't particularly fault him. Minutes after the exchange, Mr. Saleh and the Interior Minister, Hanif Atmar, resigned. The most dramatic defection from Karzai's government since he came to power 9 years ago. Saleh and Atmar said they quit because Karzai made clear he no longer considered them loyal. But, here you go, underlying the tensions, according to these two former Afghan officials, there's something a bit more profound. That Mr. Karzai has lost faith that the Americans and NATO will prevail in Afghanistan. Well, that shouldn't come as a news flash, should it? But it's being treated as such by the New York Times. And Maggie in Mount Shasta, California writes, Bill O'Reilly was the one who told the moron who called. Maggie writes, I saw Fox with Bill O last night by default at a relative's house. Oh, yeah, Maggie. And that is exactly what he was telling his viewers. In fact, he was screaming at his audience that the spill was the fault of the enviros, blaming them because the poor oil companies aren't allowed to drill on land and in the shallow water. His guy who called you was an O'Reilly ditto head to the max. Okay, so it was Bill O'Reilly. I always forget about him because I know he doesn't have a radio program. I don't know if he does or not, but the last thing I would do, I will open a vein, no, an artery before I'd ever turn on Fox. I just go with the other dorks, you know, the ones that are more well known, I guess. John is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, John.
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
Just sitting in here working. What's going on with you?
Can you hear me okay?
Well, on Fridays I can. Yes, sir.
Hey, look, man, I just wanted to chime in because I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I got pulled over in Pennsylvania one time going through the scale or going through a toll booth there, and they had DOT set up there, and I was dripping diesel fuel out of my fuel tank. And I got fined $300, got towed to a shop. They repaired the leak, and altogether cost about $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
I was fine. That's on my permanent record as a driver. And that was over capsules full of fuel. What does it take, man? What does it take? I'm a working man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean,
sure.
And they're spewing thousands of gallons, and it made me feel like a villain. Like I'm so bad because I had a rock punctured side of my fuel tank. I didn't know about it. I didn't notice my fuel, you know, mileage or anything like that. But because I was dripping fuel, I was fine. Shut down, DOT, which is Department of Transportation, and fined and shut down. And where does it end? What do we have to do, man?
Well, the I think
so,
the,
what does it take?
Well, John, I think the goal is to utterly and absolutely destroy the middle class in this country, to destroy working people. They want us all to work as serfs for giant capitalist organizations. I don't know what to tell you, pal. I've been through that in my little world, my little universe of radio broadcasting. I've worked for some pretty heavy hitters, ABC Radio Network, WLS, WSB, Air America, in almost every instance, Air America was a case of mismanagement and a bunch of freaks that worked there. But in every single case, the goal was not to provide a show with content or humor or weirdness. The goal was to toe the corporate line. And, of course, when you can no longer toe the corporate line, you wind up working for yourself. So I don't know, John. I don't know what to tell you, man. But I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Now, when we come back after this break, I want to share something with you. It was in The Nation, the current issue. Well, the June 14th issue of The Nation. That's not the current one. But it's an op-ad. It's an ad. It's not written by anybody. It's an ad put out by World Can't Wait. And it's signed by a bunch of people, everybody from Cornell West to Noam Chomsky to Ed Asner to just a whole bunch of people, names of which I'm sure you're very familiar. But I want to, David Swanson, I want to share some of the points in this ad. The headline of the ad says, "Crimes are crimes, no matter who does them." We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. After the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia, so prepare yourselves for that, right? Fred is driving in Canada, listening on Sirius. Hey, Fred.
Oh, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
I got a little take on this oil thing that I don't think anybody else has ever touched on.
All right.
You ever heard of a hydrogen sulfide?
Hydrogen sulfide. It stinks. Hello?
Hello, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, it's also known as sour gas. It's a product of pretty much every oil well that's ever drilled.
Yeah.
It's only a couple of molecules away from hydrogen cyanide, which they use to, in gas chambers to condemn people to death.
Gotcha.
It's very lethal. I was exposed to it up in the oil patch in Fort McMurray. I was in intensive care for 3 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And I was messed up for 3 or 4 years afterwards.
Wow.
And I was just a whiff of it. It's like, very, very lethal. But I was just thinking, what if a big pocket of this, a big bubble coming out of the bottom of the ocean there and drifts intact across the Gulf? I mean, it could kill millions of people. That's how deadly it is.
Well, I didn't have enough to worry about.
I know, eh? Yeah.
And now this, eh, Fred?
Yeah. Well, I think that's another reason they're using all the work fishermen and, you know, the tour guides and everything on the cleanup. You know, at the very least, they're going to get sick and die so they don't have to pay these claims.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's just evil. It's evil, Fred.
It is. It absolutely is, Mike. And I believe, too, they're going to let this spread, like, to all the oceans of the world. And you use it as a, you know, like the PNAC, you know, to thin out the population. There's no drinking water. There's a lot of people going to die.
Well, that's very true. You know, it's interesting. Fred, thank you very much. Appreciate you calling in. We were, Kathy and I were talking today that there is an organization, I'm drawing a blank right now, whose sole purpose, is it the Club of Rome? It's one of these whose sole purpose is to see the population of the globe reduced. Granted, it's way out of control. I mean, this entire little planet, from everything I've read, simply cannot sustain 7 billion people, given the lifestyle of the wealthier nations and given the lifestyle demanded by the emerging economy. I don't know. Blue is calling from Melbourne, Australia. Hello, Blue.
Yeah, good day, Mike.
Good day yourself.
Well, it's a wonderful day. I've got Cherie with me. We're on holiday for a change.
You're always on holiday.
No. Well, I wish it sometimes feels that way.
Yeah.
But we're here in Melbourne, and we're sitting at a little cafe.
Yeah.
Close by the Flinders Street station.
Right.
And there's a plaque here that says that some 50-odd years ago, this was a location for the film On the Beach.
Oh.
With Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner.
Right.
I don't know whether you've seen that film.
Oh, my God. I've seen it. I've read the book, saw the movie. I'm a big fan of, now I'm drawing a blank on his name. The guy that wrote the book.
Neville Shute.
Neville Shute. I also read another one of his books, for one of your long flights across the Indian Ocean. Read In the Wet.
You haven't got the idea that that's all we do is sit up there reading books.
Somebody told me it's very easy to fly a trans-ocean jetliner.
Actually, it is. That's one of the great myths of flying is, you know, you get off the ground and then you put your feet up on the console.
Right.
And go to sleep. So we're sitting here pretending that I'm Gregory Peck and Cherie is Ava Gardner.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Although I don't look anything like Gregory Peck. I'm rather a good-looking bloke, in point of fact.
Yeah.
But Cherie's rather a reasonable facsimile of Ava Gardner, but she's blonde.
Yeah.
And do you want to say good day? You want to say good day?
Sure.
No, she's a bit ropeable this morning. I made her ride in the baggage compartment coming over here from Brisbane.
Did you now?
So, here's the thing. I called you the other day, and I was in Mumbai.
Right.
And we ran out of time. There was something else I wanted to talk to you about.
We're about to run out of time again, but go ahead.
Well, it has to do with the, I suppose to put it as briefly as possible, the store of hatred that your country's building up in places like Pakistan, where American troops are going into Pakistan and killing Pakistani civilians.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently they're doing it with the help, covert or otherwise, of the Israelis.
Sure.
I don't know whether you're hearing about this in your media. I doubt it.
Well, not in American media, not in mainstream media, but there are websites based in the United States, and there are bloggers and writers, 80% of whom are very reputable and dig out this information. And so, the word is getting out, but it's not getting out to the even a noticeable minority of Americans. Maybe 1/10 of 1% of Americans understand what you're talking about. Let me put you on hold a second, Blue, and we'll come back because we've got to do a break here. We'll come back and finish up with Blue, and then we're going to do podcast trivia. So stay there. Don't go away. I'm Mike Malloy. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rush, 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 get your money's worth. We show it, how 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 it, how
truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. We're talking with Blue, who is called in from Melbourne, Australia. All right, where were we, Blue?
Well, my wife just called me a typical Australian male chauvinist pig, Mike.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that about Australian men, yes.
No, I'm deeply offended.
Oh, you should be deeply flattered, probably. I don't know.
Well, in any case, this bloke that I was speaking with last week, and I don't want to identify him any more than that.
Okay.
But very well-connected chap, and there's no doubt at all that American so-called troops are operating inside Pakistan and killing civilians by the score, by the hundreds. And apparently they're being aided in this slaughter by Israeli IDF
mm-hmm.
personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the connection there is, but evidently they're sharing information, as it were, about, you know, what how to kill people in the West Bank and in Pakistan. And personnel from both of these forces apparently go back and forth, either surreptitiously or more or less in the open. And what this bloke was saying was, you know, do the Americans have any idea what a store of hatred they're building up for themselves in this part of the world?
Well, the quick answer is no. The slightly longer answer would be no, and 99% of Americans don't give a damn. You have to spend enough time here, Blue, to understand that there is an arrogance in this country that is born, kind of like, you know, not to play tit for tat, but, you know, Australia was founded pretty much along the same lines as the United States. You had the penal colonies, so did we. Your white people came in and isolated and waged a form of genocide against the indigenous people, same as we. So there's some similarities between U.S. and Australia, but I think one of the big differences is similarities in attitude, national attitude. But one of the big differences is there's an arrogance here. I don't think anybody in Australia ever had a concept of manifest destiny, which is what we had, or the Europeans had, when they came to this country. That God was directing white Europeans to come over here because it was the destiny of white Europeans to come here. Whereas Australia, if I'm reading the history right, not everyone who went to Australia was emptied out of debtors' prisons.
In the 18th century, you could be sent down here.
Right.
For, you know, stealing a loaf of bread or,
sure.
you know, picking up a coin that someone dropped.
Sure.
Or being a prostitute and that sort of thing. And,
well, the arrogance and almost, there's an attitude in this country that almost is proud of its ignorance of what goes on. We have a very miserable media here. I don't know what it's like in Australia, but the media in the United States used to challenge and threaten political power. Now it simply not only acquiesces to political power, but it sucks up to it, if that's an Australian, if that's a phrase that you understand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's a terrible situation. But no, most Americans have not a clue of what U.S. foreign policy is where it concerns the people we kill and bomb and strafe and shred and turn into red mist. Very few people.
The other thing I want to squeeze in, if we have time, just a moment. We've been tracking around the internet. We came across something called the Obama Kick-Ass Song. Have you heard this?
I have not.
It has to do with satirizing Obama, who talks about being so tough with BP, and in fact BP is calling the shots, as I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
BP is calling all the shots. But you've got to listen to the thing. I don't know whether this chap, what's his name, Stephen Colbert.
Oh, yeah.
Colbert, whatever he's called. I think he's behind it. I'm not sure. But you've got to find this thing. She doesn't know either. I can't remember how you find it, but it's on the internet.
Well, no. I know exactly how to find it. Stephen Colbert has a program on television here. He also comes from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And they're very, they're kind of like the goons were from years and years ago in England.
But before you go, and I know you've got other things to do, but you've got to take a vacation and come to Australia.
Love to do it.
You've got to come to Melbourne, which is my hometown. This is where I'm from. And, you know, you may decide never to go back.
I just might. Hey, send me a ticket. We'll be there. No, I'm just kidding. All right, Blue, thank you. Always good to hear from you. Take care. Enjoy your holiday, okay?
Good day, Mike.
All right, good day, Blue. Take care. Love that guy. All right. Chris is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, about to play podcast trivia. Where all you have to do is come up with the right answer to a multiple choice question, and you win not a new car, not a new house, not a trip to Melbourne. Something much better. A one-year subscription to Malloy Program Podcast, commercial free. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike.
All right, you ready to do this?
I got a pulse.
You what?
I got a pulse.
Hold
my
on.
Heart is working.
Wait a minute. Stop the music. You got a what?
Pulse.
Spell it.
P-U-L-S-E.
Oh, pulse! I thought you were saying you have a horse. All right, you ready?
I'm as ready as I'm going to get.
Okay. Here we go. Approximately how many OSHA safety violations has BP, British Petroleum, received for willful and egregious violations of safety standards in just the last 3 years? Okay. How many safety violations? Here you go. Is it 760, 350, 14, or 2?
A.
A! 760! You're right! All right. Way to go! All right, Chris, you win. Now, did you know that, or were you guessing?
Well, I knew it wasn't the lower numbers.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought it was more like 900.
Well, get this. Between June 2007 and February 2010, there were 761 egregious citations issued to oil refineries. 760 of these were to BP. Of the other 145 refineries, only one received a citation, that was Exxon, during this time. Overall, BP accounts for 97% of the violations on record for oil refineries. How about that?
It's astounding, but not surprising.
Yeah, that's right. Astounding, but not surprising. And the good citizens of the of England are bitching and complaining because we are bitching and complaining about what BP has done and continues to do to our country.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Actually, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that if I can.
Sure, go ahead, Chris.
To be honest with you, I have some sympathy for the people who whose pensions are going to be affected by this, but it just seems to me that they might have paid a little more attention to how this company did business. I mean, this question that I just answered, I don't know if it made it to the news over there or not, but if I was invested in a company and it was a substantial part of my pension, I would pay attention to that company. And you hear of what they have done, just go back to 53 and Mossadegh.
Right.
You know, they've been misbehaving in a variety of truly dreadful ways.
Mm-hmm.
Almost since the day they were incorporated. Like I said, I have sympathy for them, but I think it was you earlier in the show who said, they ought to come on down and take a look at what these people have done.
Right.
And I don't know how many people are whose pensions have been affected by this, But I would not be surprised if in the end more people in this country are affected in a worse way, just financially.
Right. Than the pension holders.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I hear you, Chris. I wish there was... I wish there was some way to let the people of the UK understand, or whoever holds stock in BP, to the extent that they're getting a substantial amount of money, exactly what this horrible company has done. Chris, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in now. Stay there. Don't hang up. Kathy's going to get the information for your podcast subscription. We'll be back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Okay, there's an ad, an op-ad, they call it. You've seen it on the editorial page of the New York Times, usually run by one of these filthy oil companies. This is an op-ad in The Nation, run by World Can't Wait. And the headline says, crimes are crimes, no matter who does them. And then it has a picture of George W. Bush and a picture of Barack Obama. One, it is now common knowledge that Barack Obama has openly ordered the assassination of an American citizen, Anwar al-Awlaki. Al-Awlaki is suspected of participating in plots by al-Qaeda. He denies these charges. No matter, without trial or other judicial proceedings, the administration has simply put him on the to-be-killed list. Two, whistleblowers in the military have now leaked a video showing U.S. troops firing on an unarmed party of Iraqis in 2007, including two journalists, and then firing on those who attempted to rescue them, including two children. As ugly as this video of the killing of 12 Iraqis was, the chatter recorded in the helicopter cockpit is even more monstrous. The Pentagon says that there will be no charges against the soldiers, and the media absolves them of blame. The story goes, they were under stress. Our brave men and women must be supported. Meanwhile, those who leaked the video came under government surveillance and are targeted as national security threats. Three, the Pentagon has recently acknowledged, after denials, a massacre near the city of Gardez in Afghanistan on February 12, 2010. Five people were killed, including two pregnant women, leaving 16 children motherless. The U.S. military first said the two men killed were insurgents, and the victims and the women were victims of a family honor killing. But the Afghan government accepts the eyewitness reports that U.S. Special Forces killed the men, a police officer and a lawyer, and the women, and then dug their own bullets out of the women's bodies to destroy evidence. Top U.S. military officials have now admitted that U.S. soldiers killed the family in their house. Four. Just weeks earlier, a story broke in Harper's by Scott Horton carried news that three supposed suicides of detainees in Guantanamo in 2006 were not suicides, but homicides carried out by American personnel. This passed almost without comment. In some respects, all this is worse than Bush. First, because Obama has claimed the right to assassinate American citizens whom he suspects of, quote, terrorism, end quote, merely on the grounds of his own suspicion or that of the CIA, something Bush never claimed publicly. Second, Obama says that the government can detain you indefinitely, even if you have been exonerated in a trial. And he has publicly floated the idea of preventive detention. Third, the Obama administration, in expanding the use of unmanned drone attacks, argues that the United States has the authority under international law to use extrajudicial killing in sovereign countries with which it is not at war. Such measures by Bush were widely considered by liberals and progressives to be outrages and were roundly and correctly protested. But those acts, which may have been construed, wishfully or not, as anomalies under the Bush regime, have now been consecrated into standard operating procedure by Obama, who claims, as did Bush, executive privilege and state secrecy in defending the crime of aggressive war. Unsurprisingly, the Obama administration has refused to prosecute any members of the Bush regime who are responsible for war crimes, including some who admitted to waterboarding and other forms of torture, thereby making their actions acceptable for him or any future president. And the ad was paid for by worldcantwait.org. If you want to go to their website, worldcantwait.org. Yeah, it is kind of surprising, I guess, to some people that our crack news media, or our news media on crack, take your pick, in this country, refuses to... Of course, they didn't say anything about Bush either, but they're not going to say anything about these atrocities being committed by the Obama administration. And unless you believe that the presidency has been rendered impotent and without any power at all, when I say the Obama administration, I'm referring to Barack Obama. He has the authority. He has the power. All of which can lead you to the conclusion that we're in a hell of a mess. The ad, like I say, the ad is at The Nation. I guess you can get it at thenation.com, or you can go to worldcantwait.org. Ay, ay, ay. All right, we have a break coming. That's why I'm not going to take a call right now. If you're on hold, stay there. We will get you a call as soon as we come back. Because I have a whole stack of things here, but what the hell. We'll do some phone calls when we come back, and maybe Alexander Coburn has a column in the same issue of The Nation, a portion of which should be, we should discuss. His column is Israel:Into Deeper Darkness. And as Blue pointed out in his call from Australia, isn't it interesting how few Americans have any idea or even care? I realize that some of this stuff, what's the point in caring about it? The United States of America has lost its moral bearings a long time ago. So anything that we're doing around the world to continue these assassinations and killings and so on and so forth really and truly is pretty much business as usual. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We'll be coming to your phone calls here in just a second. Regarding hydrogen sulfide, the badass chemical that that was Chris in Albuquerque was talking about that, right? Michael writes, it really does depend on concentration. Most of the oil field deaths and injuries from hydrogen sulfide occur in poorly ventilated areas because it does disperse readily in air. Is it hydrogen disulfide? Whatever. And in the oil patch here, New Mexico, it's often the result of inadequate safety equipment or training in use of the equipment because there are clip-on sniffers available to detect it. Corexit, the dispersant now in use because BP makes money using it since they have a relationship with the firm that makes it. Corexit, the dispersant, will be a much greater health problem than hydrogen sulfide. P.S. If the oil companies start claiming that the people exposed had pre-existing brain problems, that's an indication. Serious exposure to the gas will cause severe neurological problems, including aneurysms, strokes, and Parkinson's-like symptoms. You know, you got to wonder sometimes, don't you? Remember the movie Aaron Brockovich? You just have to... One has to wonder, when the decision is made to manufacture stuff like this and then use it without people coming in contact with it, understanding fully what they're coming in contact with, whether it is United States military using Agent Orange or people hired by BP to spray these dispersants or clean up globs of oil. I sometimes wonder what do the people who make these decisions to expose their fellow human beings to this stuff, what do they think? Knowing, as I'm sure most of them do, that they are asking their fellow human being to expose himself or herself to death in a very miserable way. You know, during the day sometimes when we're at home here and we have CNN or MSNBC on, and they run all these commercials, I mentioned this before, for the attorney firms, and they talk about mesothelioma, this hideous form of lung cancer. And the ad will list all the different industries where a worker might have been exposed to it, up to including the U.S. Navy. And I just, I don't know, as old as I am, I still have to claim a streak of naivete that I still find it shocking, I tell you, that corporate America or capitalism does this to people consciously, deliberately, and horribly, probably with no malice aforethought, as the expression goes. They just don't care. I mean, not that they're consciously trying to kill workers. They just don't care. They don't care. And that shouldn't be a shock to me or to you. I mean, we've talked about this dozens of times. Capitalism doesn't care the least on any level about human life or human health. It's just not in the equation. It's not there. Only to the extent that human beings, workers, are expendable. You know, they spend more time with factory equipment. If factory equipment starts to run down or get rusty, and the technology has not changed, usually the corporation will fix it. You know, they'll fix the equipment. They'll make sure that it runs efficiently again. Where it concerns human beings, they don't do that. It's just, oh, the worker has got cancer. Oh, that's a shame. See where he lied on his health insurance application, where he didn't list that he had cystic acne when he was 14, and we'll use that as a way of dropping his claim. Screw him, you know, if they even give it that much thought. I mean, doesn't that bother anybody? Or some of you right-wingers driving around listening on XM and Sirius, I mean, are you thinking to yourself now, well, you know, what's the alternative, Mike? What would you do, Mike? I mean, doesn't any of this register at all that it's our economic system that is killing us, killing this country, and killing the planet? Doesn't that matter? I'm sure there's some 35-year-old conservatives out there who still think they're going to live forever, who may have a kid or two, may have a spouse, a husband or a wife, and they proudly consider themselves to be conservatives. And I swear to God, I think to myself, how can you do that? Because your political philosophy is a death philosophy. It's a death of everything. It doesn't conserve anything. That's the joke. That's the funny part. It doesn't conserve anything. It's a death-oriented socio-political economic philosophy. Capitalism. Corporatism. Oh, well. I guess it doesn't matter. Chip is in Elba, Alabama. Hey, Chip.
Hey, man. I was just calling. I was wanting to know, man, why the government don't step in on this deal with BP. Why don't they take over this deal, man? They're going to let our marshlands go to hell, man. I don't know what the deal is with that. What are they going to do if BP can't stop this? What are they going to actually do? I really want some answers about that, because people are hurting down there. What is Obama going to do about taking care of this?
Sure. In the first place, let me try to answer, Chip. In the first place, there's a strong political movement right now to tell the federal government to get the hell out of the affairs of the states. You know that's going on, obviously. Secondly, Barack Obama is just like George W. Bush or Bill Clinton or Pappy Bush or Ronald Reagan. Trust me on this, Chip. He is a corporatist. Corporatist. Corporate America has owned this country for a very, very, very long time, but it has blatantly owned it during the Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, and now Obama years. And because corporate America owns our system of government, they're in no hurry to repair or replace or do anything. What is Obama supposed to do? And I don't ask that question in defense of Obama. I'm thoroughly pissed about this. But what's he supposed to do? He is not designed or geared or in the mode to have done something, or he would have done it by now. This is the part that makes me just want to grab some of these right-wingers and bash their heads up against a wall. And I'm serious, because, you know, they insisted this guy's a socialist. You know what a socialist would have done? In the first place, a socialist would have nationalized the energy industry as soon as he took power. But if he didn't do that, if he were just a mild socialist, when this happened with BP, the first thing he would have done was listen to the scientists, not the corporation. And then he would have turned to BP and said, you know what you've done? You have created an extinction level event for the Gulf of Mexico. You no longer have a right to do business here, and if I can stop it anywhere. Your company now belongs to the American people. End of story. But Chip, Obama is Bush. Bush is Clinton. Clinton is Reagan. That's all. And as long as we have the system that we have, I'm sorry, pal, but as long as we have the economic, political system we have, you know what? Chip, listen up. It's never going to change. Never, never. They're going to kill Alabama. They're going to kill Mississippi and Florida. They're going to kill Louisiana. They're going to kill the United States. And they're going to kill the goddamn planet. That's the best I can give you, pal. I'm sorry.
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
I was born like this. I had no choice. Born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
22 past the hour.
So you can stick your little pin.
Got an email here from Ron in Fort Wayne who writes, "Hey Mike, something has really been eating at me about this oil deal. It just doesn't make any sense to me why the fourth largest corporation in the world, BP, would shun spending $500,000 to repair parts of their machinery that they knew to be faulty and at risk, and therefore risk what has happened, unless possibly they were instructed to let her blow. And who in all the world would do something like that? The same thugs that engineered 9/11, that's who. After all, Cheney's baby, Halliburton, has been on the scene. What better way to wreak havoc and chaos than to poison one of the most pristine areas in the world, destroy the ecological system, sideline hundreds of people from their jobs, and embarrass and stifle Obama and the Democrats, and render the Democratic Party powerless due to their inability to make decisions on how to get a grip on the situation? Why hasn't their buddies, the Saudis, been asked to lend a hand with this? After all, they have a fleet of supertankers that did clean up a nasty spill in the Persian Gulf in the early 90s. Do the Saudis not owe us a debt of gratitude for protecting them from big, bad Saddam Hussein? I smell a big, fat rat here. And that rat is one with no regard for human life, or any other life form for that matter. And it's the same bastards that brought down the towers in Manhattan on 9/11. And Biggie Rat is none other than one Dick Cheney. Ron in Fort Wayne. It does make sense, doesn't it, Ron? Huh? I mean, who knows? But it just stands to reason. Cheney hates his country so much. He hates our system so thoroughly. And he hates the black guy in the White House with the kind of poison that a right-wing white man racist has the ability to conjure up to a level that's almost scary when you get around it. So all the pieces are in place. There's no question about that. All the pieces are in place for someone like Cheney and Halliburton and the rest of these bastards to, you know, once again, and not deliberately say, although this thought might have been in Cheney's mind, not deliberately say, let's go to the Gulf of Mexico and kill everything. Rather, to say to the energy industry thugs who met with Cheney all those years ago, to say, look, we're going to completely disable the regulatory system in the United States, George and I. Of course, George doesn't have a clue, but we'll handle it. We're going to disable the regulatory system, and we're going to staff some of these permitting agencies with thugs that we choose for their moral weakness. We're going to choose people who will spend their days watching porn on the internet, or cheating on their spouses, or getting drunk, or smoking reefer, or doing crack, or whatever. That's what we're going to put in. So, energy industry, you can do anything you want to do. You want to cut corners? Cut them. Don't shave them. Cut them. Cut them completely. Change the corners into a circle. Do whatever you have to do. Just make sure I get my cut, okay? Cheney personifies, as does his daughter, personifies evil. And I don't believe in evil. I don't believe in evil as an intrinsic value. You know, I believe that evil is the lack of compassion. The lack of love for the planet or fellow human beings or your own family or whatever it is. Cheney is that. He is evil. There's no question. George W. Bush was just a dumbass, just a frat boy who got picked to be the front man, the beard for Cheney. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So Ron in Indiana, yeah, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Not the least. But you know what, Ron? this is something that you and I, way down here on the food chain, this is something that you and I will never discover, never be privy to, ever. So, and since there's no afterlife, no heaven, no hell, no whatever the hell these crazy religions talk about, no judgment day, you know, would that there were a hell so that I don't know about the rest of you people, so that I could slide down the pole into hell and go find Cheney and, you know, cut a deal with one of the demons and just, you know, say, look, I'll take care of this one for you for all eternity. But it doesn't work out that way, does it? We'll be back after the break to your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
With their fingers crossed, everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Broken feeling like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking into their pockets. Everybody wants a
burden. Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Oh, by the way, what we talked about last night about the Pixies, the alternative rock band being declared a terrorist organization by the government of Canada. That was a very good joke. It really was. It caught a lot of people. I think it started, well, it was a professor in Canada, but it was picked up by an Australian website. And as they say, just went viral. And of course, you know, I have a certain allotment of mistakes and errors that I have to make in a week's time in order to qualify as I'm trying to get my mainstream media press pass. And that means I have to do a certain number of stupid ass things and make a certain number of mistakes in any given week in order to qualify. If I make enough of them, I get to join the White House press corps. Warren is in Revere, Mass. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Mike. I would love to see you in the White House press corps.
I'd last maybe 10 minutes.
You know what? I wouldn't last much longer.
I hear you.
How long is it going to be before I go down here to Revere Beach and pick up tar balls, you know?
Boy, not long.
Not long.
If it ever hits the Gulf Stream, you'll see them up there.
Yeah. Well, maybe I won't, because maybe they won't let me. Maybe they'll erect some kind of barrier or have a no-walk zone, because I think you know they have a no-fly zone.
Oh, they have a no-everything zone.
No-everything.
We talked about this the other night. When you see a foreign corporation giving orders to the United States military that in turn gives orders to American media, and everybody follows those orders, you just want to scream or run or, I don't know, maybe just give up and say, yeah, it's finally happened.
Yeah. This media blackout in that regard, in not letting the media, it's all commentary. It's all just commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, and that silly camera, which part of the Gulf is that, you know? And how many of these things are there? I mean, I'm starting to wonder.
I know.
And I just really think it's interesting to have a foreign, you know, mega corporation from the country that we supposedly fought this revolution against.
Yeah.
No less. Irony. Commanding our Coast Guard and telling our FAA who to tell, where to fly, when. You know, well,
and you know the horrible part, Warren, that couldn't possibly happen without the tacit okay of the President of the United States.
And, absolutely not.
And if this was George W. Bush, every single Democrat, every single Democratic politician, every single liberal, every single progressive would be screaming his or her guts out. But because it's Barack Obama, who a lot of people still think is the savior of the United States, you hear nothing except, you know, maybe from, World Can't Wait, or some of these other, anti-war, pro-democracy sites, but, it's just a sorry state of affairs that we understand, and I think you understand too, that this wouldn't be happening without the tacit approval of Obama.
I do understand, and you know, I find it highly amusing when he gets out there and, you know, says a naughty word.
Yeah,
you know, just to. How awkward was that, you know, to relate to the common guy? You know?
Oh, I know.
It was you know, sickening.
I know.
To me. And I had one question, Mike.
Sure.
Because you might know more about this than I do. Did you hear these, I don't know if they're rumors or if they're verified, you know, but seems that speculators from either one of these, I get them all mixed up, Lehman Brothers and Goldman Sachs and all this.
No, I know what
you mean. Have you heard these, these stories?
Yeah, Goldman Sachs dumped something like 600,000 shares, but our economic advisor to this program says that that is not uncommon. He didn't see any kind of conspiracy there. That is just normal movement. That these huge investment banks like Goldman Sachs that they do. Now, do they try to jigger the price of stocks by massive buys or massive sell-offs? Oh, of course. Of course they do that. But I don't think it was a case of, they're going to blow up the, you know, the deep water or whatever the hell it's called, so let's dump 600,000 shares. I don't think that was the case at all.
Yeah, I just heard one thing, and you never know. I mean, I sometimes I'm to the point where I can't tell whether I'm listening to NPR or Alex Jones or something, you know.
Boy, you got that right.
You know, or Coast to Coast, you know, and I heard one thing about one person who'd already been kind of in one of these little snafus. I don't remember the specifics, so I'm not going to go on about it, but it's all got me reading Mao Zedong's book about guerrilla warfare and General Giap and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I'm starting to lose it a little bit. I'm slipping.
Well,
but,
now, if it takes you into a place where you start to consider what it's going to be like in this country to have to either quietly accept 10, 15% unemployment, quietly accept low-paying jobs and a complete driving down of standards of living in this country. If you're not going to quietly accept that, it's probably good that you're reading books on guerrilla tactics. You know what I'm saying? I think you do. Warren, thanks, man. I got to leave it there. Appreciate it. Take care. Tom is in Mount Airy, Maryland. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. What's going on, man?
You are, always.
Oh, yes, sir. Hey, man, you know, I found your show way back when the Iraq War first started, the day, man. I walked out of school, I went down to D.C., to the White House with a ragtag group of like 30 people, came back all pissed off, and I found your show. I've been addicted ever since, all right?
Well, bless your heart.
Thank you, sir. Anyway, I want to tell you, last night you were saying, you know, you can't, the term illegal. I hate that term as well. You know, I think it implies that these people are less than human. Illegal, I mean, it seems to imply that these people have no rights because they crossed an imaginary line on the land. It drives me crazy.
Well, yeah, that's why I occasionally still do it as force of habit, but I'm not going to refer to people as illegals. You know, that's not, to me, it's not a noun. I realize it might have entered, the dictionary through usage as a noun, but it's an adjective to me, or an adverb in some cases, but it's not a noun. I can't refer to people as illegals. People may not have proper documentation. I don't have the proper documentation to be a doctor. You know, these workers, these Mexican workers or Honduran workers or Guatemalans, whoever they are, they may not have proper documentation, but they're not illegals. You know, what a disgusting word.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. You know, I'm at work right now. I'm guy midnight shift at the gas station with my e-cigs, man. And,
good for you.
Dear God, I opened the doors in the morning. I got all these teabaggers coming in last night. I would have a conversation with you, man. I'm like, oh, I used to live here and here. And he's like, oh, I don't go there no more.
Right.
It's already, it turned into that Guatemala, whatever. I'm like, really? Really, dude? Come on now. And I got to say, you know, I lived down in a very culturally diverse area, you know, maybe over a decade ago, you know, closer to D.C. And, you know, all of my friends as a child were Hispanic, Black, and White.
Right.
Okay? And I moved up here to Hickville. It was a culture shock to me. This is insane. It's a bunch of white people. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, be careful of white folks, Tom. They'll cut your throat and laugh while you bleed. So be cool. Listen, I got to go, pal. Thank you. Stay in touch, all right? Take care, Tom. Bruce writes, regarding oil well, no tinfoil hat is needed. It is common corporate bean counter screw-ups. They have been ignoring their own BP engineers that told them the drill pipe wasn't heavy enough, the cement casing was too weak, and using seawater instead of mud would cause a blowout. And they would need to depend on the blowout preventer, the BPO, or the BOP. The type of BOP they were using failed 4 out of 5 times in testing. The one on the wellhead didn't have any hydraulic oil in the tank that activates the shutoff valve, and the battery was dead. So it didn't sound the alarm, all because they didn't want to waste money on maintenance or inspections. Yeah, and I think what Bruce is pointing out, you know, we don't have to really look at conspiracies. That's why, you know, regarding 9/11, I don't think there was this active, thought-out plan. And I'm not trying to piss you off. If you believe that that's what happened, okay. I'm more of the let it happen on purpose. You know, just stand back, leave things alone, especially when you've been given warning after warning after warning that all hell's going to break loose in the United States. Well, hell, why plot anything? Why not just, you know, throw your hands up and say, okay, let's go cut brush, and the bad guys will take care of everything at their leisure. You understand what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think Bruce is right. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Thank you to the folks who provide substance to this program every single week. Sharon Gordy, Military Affairs, Bruce Enberg, Economics, Kay Petrini, Education, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf, who provide ethical boundaries. And a lot of people contribute an awful lot to this show. Thank you very much. You know who you are. If you listen to this program, you hear me in so many instances, you know, the different names. A lot of people contribute. But when I hit one of those sandbars, you know, and go, you know, Bruce will come through, Michael and Roswell come through, somebody always comes through with Irish Dave. You know, there's just so many people who immediately provide a life raft, a life preserver. But anyway, thanks to everybody who participates in the program. We really do appreciate it. All right. Kathy Bay is our executive producer and engineer. Joe is in San Diego listening on XM. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How you doing?
Okay. You had it right. You know, I was listening to you before about what you were saying about the left. And most importantly, I'm wondering myself why anybody on the left, progressive radio, is gatekeeping Obama so much. Knowing that what he's done with over there in Afghanistan, not that he's done it, but what the soldiers have done over there in Afghanistan, the drones, how they've taken lives of innocent civilians after going after these so-called insurgents, hiring the cabinet, a bunch of Republicans, really, like Geithner and Summers, Eric Holder as the attorney general, who worked for some law firm that protected Halliburton, people like Halliburton and other oil companies. I mean, how far is this going to go? How far is this going to go before somebody says, hey, look, if it's good enough, if it was good enough for us to say, let's impeach Bush, why not impeach this guy, too? I mean, let's get down to the point.
Well,
let's get down to the bone here.
Well, I think the reason is, I hear what you're saying, but I think the reason is Obama has not initiated lawbreaking that we're aware of. Is he continuing the process set up by George W. Bush and Bush's cadre of scum lawyers in working out of the Justice Department? Yeah. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people who attack Bush attack him for all the wrong attack Obama, attack him for all the wrong reasons. They say he's illegal. He was born in Kenya. That his citizenship is illegal. Their term, not mine. All this nonsense.
That's why they lose out, because they're not.
But they don't
attack him the right way.
But it's all diversion.
You know, they don't attack him for the truth.
It's all diversionary garbage, and it has been through this so much of this part of Obama's presidency, 8 years of Bush, 8 years of Clinton. It's diversion and distraction. You know, the bottom line to me, Joe, is either our economic system and our political system has to change, or the country is over. And it's very simple. How to do that? I have no idea. A lot of people on the far left will tell you that only violent evolution or revolution will do it. A lot of people on the far right will say the same thing. The difference is, of course, the people on the far left are looking for social justice. The people on the far right are looking for totalitarian kind of system. And I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I just know that there seems to be a confluence of these horrendous events that are too big, even on their own. They're almost too big to comprehend. I don't think any of us understands what we're facing with this volcano of oil that's gushing into the Gulf. Nobody understands it. We see the damage that it's doing to estuaries and shorelines and beaches and so on and so forth. But it's so much bigger than that. And I don't know. I don't, you know, I've said before, I have no answers. I have nothing. the only function that, this program provides, or the only function that it performs, I should say, is to just give a place to come to if you want to and talk about it. And some of these things may be so big that they are totally insoluble. I mean, how do you get a government to stop assassinating people, as you point out, from the drone aircrafts? How do you get a government to eliminate what is essentially already preventive detention? How do you get a government to stop targeted assassinations, even against its own people? I mean, how do you do that? Somebody would say with a very brief answer, people who say, look, you know, you got to stop talking about this, Malloy. There's only one way to do it. And that's, this country is heading for another revolution. It's just that simple. And then I stop and think, but it's not just here. It's not just in this country. I mean, Jesus, if you can do it, just pick up the New York Times or watch some newscasts on television about what's going on all over the place. So, you know, Joe, I appreciate you checking in, man. I got to leave it there. I have no idea. I have no answers. I used to think I had some, a few. When I was younger, I used to think I had them all. But the older I got, the more I thought, well, maybe one or two. I don't have anything. And I don't think anybody else does either. I'll see you Monday. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. And Kevin Kenny, have a great weekend wherever you are.